Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. We took a week off last week, but if you missed it, Brett gave his thoughts on the Donovan Mitchell trade. We are doing kind of a review of the offseason for each division in the NBA. We're not actually giving predictions, just, you know, kind of going through what each team did. Today, we are doing the NBA Central Division. But first, man, Brett, what's going on, man? Dude, you're looking good. Rocking the Cavs jersey for the little Central Division preview and the OKC hat. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, the OKC hat kind of matches the Cavs jersey, so it was a natural choice. And I was trying to decide which jersey to wear. It was like, I mean, I think I have one for every Central Division team, but I figured I would bust out the Larry Hughes. This is one of my all-time favorite Cavs jersey designs. I would like to see them bring it back. I don't know. Maybe they already have, but if not, they should do it. It's pretty dope. So, yeah, we're repping Larry Hughes today. Felt appropriate since we're talking Central Division. I'm disappointed that you're not wearing a Bucks jersey. I was going to wear my Bucks jersey, but I was like,
I got the Bucks shirt on, dude. I got the Bucks hat on, dude. We're good, dude. We're good. We're good over here, baby.
But, yeah, man, I'm hyped to do this. It's cool to be able to see you. I don't know if the video of this is going to be released. We'll see how it turns out, how the connection is. If it's not too choppy or anything like that, we'll probably just release the video on YouTube. If not, we'll release the audio, and it's cool to see you, man. It's like I'm actually having a real face-to-face conversation with you. It's a little different, man. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, we should always do it this way.
It's beautiful seeing you. I love it. We'll put some of this on our YouTube channel. And yeah, man, I'm excited. But first, man, before we get into the Central Division, I know we were talking about doing a podcast on this, but I think with kind of the previews that we're going to do and kind of give our predictions, you know, our annual, this will be the third time we're doing this, over-unders, all that stuff, that's going to take up a lot of our time. Because, I mean, in 1 month from today, man, the NBA starts. It's crazy because it feels like it just ended for real. But I'm excited. I know you're excited. But this came up about a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago. I know I'm in a group chat with some of the other people of the NBA Overstated group, and a lot of them were Seattle fans, so they weren't happy with what I wanted to say. But a report came out that was kind of leaked. We all knew it was coming. There's going to be two expansion teams. The money is just out of control. Like it's going to happen. Let's just be clear. It's going to happen. It's probably going to be Seattle and Las Vegas. Those are the two prime teams. You know, in the last couple of years, Vegas has gotten a hockey team. Obviously, the Raiders move there. It makes sense to put an NBA
WNBA team champions.
Yeah, I was going to say the WNBA champions. Shout out to Mark Davis. He's a champion. Vegas is a perfect city for it. I know you love it. I love it. And then Seattle, obviously, they got their team stolen from them. I know this is going to happen. I know I'm going to catch a lot of shit for this, but I hate this idea. I hate the idea of expanding. One of the things that I really, and you and I have briefly talked about this, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts because we don't know each other's thoughts on this, but I hate it because I think the NBA is at a point right now where there's a lot of parity. You know, look at the off-season reviews that we have been doing. The West is deep. I think the West has, what, 5 or 6 teams? That's how deep they are. The East is the exact same way. I like it. I like being able to watch a game on NBA League Pass or watch a game on TNT or ESPN and like where it actually means something. You know, where we're not just watching it because we're NBA dorks and, hey, I just want to see what's going down with Orlando, right? Or what's going on with Sacramento. I think the league is in a good place. I think it's going to continue to get into a good place. I mean, we've had a couple of really, really, really good draft classes. I think that's going to continue a little bit. I love parity. I think, you know, not to compare the NBA to the NFL because it's just a whole different business model in general. But one of the things that the NFL has that the NBA doesn't have, dude, there's parity. You go into each season with, I would say, 95% of the teams thinking that they have a shot. Like if you would have asked a Giant or a Jets fan that they're going to be 2-0 this week, they'd be like, dude, you're full of shit. But here they are. I want to see the NBA kind of go towards that a little bit. I mean, we just think about it. You go back to the 90s, it was the Chicago Bulls and Jordan. Then we had kind of a Laker 4 or 5 year run there. In the last decade, it's been either Golden State or LeBron James. So it's literally who it's been in the NBA Finals. You have the Spurs sprinkled in there. I think there's only in the last 30 years, maybe, there's been 8 different teams that have won a title. I like the parity in the NBA. I understand why they're doing this. I think it's going to be, if they do an expansion draft, I think it's going to be a little bit of a talent drain on the NBA. I think it's going to be a little bit weakened. I would prefer just move a team. Like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I don't think I'm offending anybody in LA when I say, dude, get the Clippers out of there. It's a Laker town. It's always going to be a Laker town. Steve Ballmer's from Seattle. I know that he's already building an arena. I get it. Like, it's not going to happen. I get it. And then maybe can you do something with, you know, sorry, Janet, can you do something with the Pelicans, who just are always seem to be dead last in attendance? I don't know. Nah. I think there's different ways to do it. But, man, I would love to hear your thoughts, because, yes, Seattle deserves an NBA team. Yes, I understand that Vegas is getting a team. I just – the league is in such a good spot right now with all these teams. Like, I think Detroit, man, could be a couple years away. Look at us talking about – we're going to talk about Cleveland today. 2 years ago, man, we did not think Cleveland was going to be – have this type of squad around them with
– The Bulls, too.
Evan Mobley, who could be, you know, mm-hmm. a first or second team All-NBA player, throwing Donovan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. Like, they're loaded. And I want to see these teams continue to just build. The majority of the teams, I think for the first time in a long time, they got smart GMs. I think everyone knows what they're doing. That's my rant on it. I know that it's unpopular. I know people are going to disagree with it, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the report that came out that, you know, there's going to be expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly agree with you on it. I definitely get the argument for expansion, and I do think that the talent level is deep enough right now where the league could sustain an expansion without maybe even a noticeable effect on the parity. You know, I think you'd end up getting probably a couple really bad teams for a little while out of it. The expansion teams, I can't imagine they'd be very good right off the bat, considering kind of the strength of the rest of the league, like you alluded to. But at the same time, I do want as much parity as possible. There's been a couple of exceptions, you know, like the Raptors. I think even this past season's Warriors, like nobody thought they were going to win a title before the season. Like there have been some sort of surprise title teams, but for the most part, you know, you can sort of like narrow it down to five or six teams before the season, and it's for sure when it's going to be one of those teams. But also, like, I think it's cool that these teams are so deep. I feel like I've said this about nine different teams in the last month, just talking about them. Like, oh, they're one of the deepest teams in the league. Oh, they're one of the deepest teams in the league. I said it, you know, about the Clippers, who obviously are insanely deep, but I said it about the Raptors. And you look at the Celtics, insanely deep. Like, I was looking at the Wizards. Their coach just came out and said that the starting small forward position is completely up for grabs. And I'm like thinking of the guys that could come down to. It's like Will Barton and Rui Hachimura and Denny Avdia and Corey Kispert. And I'm like, fuck, the Wizards are deep as hell. And I'm like, that's the whole league. Like, you know, and that's how it used to be like in the 80s, like before they expanded, you know, before they added Miami and Orlando and then later Vancouver and Toronto. Like that's how it was in the 80s, where like you would have these benches with like Hall of Famers on it. These teams would go like 10 deep with super quality players. And that's what you're starting to see now. So like even more than the parity, and maybe that leads to parity, but like that's what I do enjoy seeing, is like these just super solid, deep teams. And I just kind of want to see what that looks like. Like, can we let this play out for a few years? Like, so while I definitely think Seattle deserves a team, and I do think a Vegas team would be dope as hell, and I do think expansion is inevitable and ultimately a good idea, like I'm not in a rush to do it. Like, I think part of me wants to see it, but a bigger part of me wants to see how this extraordinarily talented NBA spread out among just 30 teams looks for at least a few years. Cause I think we're entering into like a really cool era. Like something I talk about a lot, and I know I've talked about it on the pod and on Twitter, is like the quote unquote worst teams in the league right now. Okay. Detroit, Orlando, you know, Houston, OKC, whatever, like the, whoever you want to say are like the worst teams in the league.
They're exciting though. Look at the players.
That's what I'm saying. Look at those rosters and then go back to like 2006 and look at the four, you know, or six or whatever worst teams in the league. They were not exciting then. I know it's easy to say, oh, well, we look back. Yeah, those guys, none of them panned out. But like, no, they weren't that exciting at the time. Like those teams were depressing. And now the worst teams in the league are exciting. And not only are they loaded with talented young players like Orlando and Detroit and OKC and Houston are like legitimately like superstar potential players, multiple of those guys on all these teams. You know, they play good basketball too, you know? So it's not just that they have these talented guys that could develop into superstars. It's like when you watch them, like they run pretty stuff, they play good basketball, they're competitive. They can beat any team on any given night. And like that didn't exist 15, 20 years ago, even probably 10 years ago. or even 5 years ago, not to the extent that it does now. So like, I think that's something that I'm excited about too. And it's like, I know that a certain number of teams have to miss the playoffs, but they're going to be fun to watch. They're going to be competitive. And like, we'll talk about this more on the pod, but I think like at least one or two of these bottom dwellers, these perceived bottom dwellers for the upcoming season, actually will have a chance to elevate themselves and compete for a play-in spot because they have that kind of talent. And if things just start clicking, then they might just be like, hey, let's go for it. And that wouldn't have been possible, I don't think, in earlier eras. So that I kind of just want to see how this plays out, man. Like before we jump into expansion, like maybe we expand in 5 years, you know, so that would probably be ideal for me. I'm not in like a rush to do it. So I mostly align with your views on this, I think.
Yeah. And I look at it too, as maybe a positive from not doing it, or like you just said, just waiting and see how this all kind of plays out, is I think it would almost restrict a little bit the quote unquote star superstars moving. Like, I don't want to see, here's my fear with expansion, right? We're going to talk about Detroit. Let's just talk about Detroit now. Like, you have Cade Cunningham, who is a bona fide, he has got first team, second team, all NBA potential, right? He could be, again, it's his second year. Like, we're not trying to set expectations too high, but he could legitimately be your number one option on an NBA finals team. Like, oh, yeah. There's not a doubt in my mind. But like, all right, let's just say the league expands. Maybe it takes away one of his rotation players or something like that. I don't want Cade to sign a rookie max extension and then 2 years into it going, this Detroit team is so bad, man, I got to go to another team. Like, I want to see Cade and Jaden. I want to see those guys play together. Like, I want to see Detroit keep building and building and building. Like, I don't want to see that kind of stuff happen. And like you said, man, I feel like a couple of these teams, man, is look at Orlando. Like, Orlando's got a shit ton of potential. When you look at Paolo, you look at Front. Like, they're an exciting team. Even a team that we like to shit on a little bit, Sacramento's got some exciting parts going on too.
Look,
man.
Dude, like, they're deep. Like, if you look at their like, they've got some good players in their bench. When I look at that team, I'm like, a few years ago, like, people would be like, damn, that's like a super deep team. But now that's again what we're seeing throughout the league. I'll say this, like, okay, so the thing people are saying is that we're getting to a situation where there's like a surplus of quality NBA players, right? Like, there's so much talent that, okay, let's spread it out a little more. Maybe it's too much talent for 30 teams. Like, I've heard that almost said, or at least implied. And what about the G League? If there's a surplus of NBA talent, like, why not focus on the G League a little bit? Like, expand the G League. All the teams that don't have G League affiliates, like, get them one and invest more. Maybe make another version of the Ignite. Like, have a couple teams like that. Because I think the G League has a ton of potential and could be really watchable and could be a really good product. Especially if there's this influx of talent where like the NBA just can't hold all this talent and you have guys that would have been rotation players, if not starters, 10, 15 years ago. And now they're in the G League just because the NBA is so loaded with talent. And like, I don't think that's a bad thing as long as you can do what it takes to make the G League a really good product and you don't lose those guys to European clubs, Australian NBL, you know, things like that. Like, if you can keep that talent pool in the G League and make the G League an entertaining product that people want to watch. Like, I almost think that would be cooler than the expansion thing, like a legit farm system, maybe change the way call-ups are, you know, the two-way contracts and everything. Like, I don't know, you could make some adjustments to that to make it an even bigger part of things, it even closer to the NBA than it already is. So I'd almost want to see that, like that prioritized, but there's a lot of money that wants to come into the NBA with these expansion teams. And I know it's inevitable, but yeah, let's, I'd rather them not just rush into it. Like, I'd rather not see like all these teams lose a couple guys all of a sudden. Like, I just want to see how this plays out. I love where the league is at right now.
Me too, man. And again, as we were doing this, and next week we're going to do kind of our predictions on previews, but man, I cannot remember the last time when you look at the West, right? You have Golden State, the defending champions. You have the Clippers. You have the Suns. You have Dallas, who has Luka. Throw in Denver, who's probably going to be a beast this year. Minnesota's going to win a ton of games. As you said, I mean, just think about it. I think maybe even a couple years ago, you know, your other team, Portland, that would have been a shoo-in to make the playoffs. Now, dude, they might be fighting for the play-in if you go and look at everything. I mean,
this could be the best roster Dame's had. I mean, you know, we have to see how it plays out on the court, but on paper, I would say at least since the, I think it was like 2013 and 2014, like his second and third years where they won 50 plus games with LaMarcus Aldridge and those guys. Like, this is certainly the best team he's had since then. And most people don't think they're going to make the playoffs. And if they don't, it's like that. I mean, it's possible that they don't because the West is so stacked. But like for a team of that caliber, or the Pels, or like the Grizzlies, or like there could be a really good team that just doesn't make the playoffs. Like, and that's kind of unfortunate, but also like the play-in is here now. So it's sort of the play-in kind of addresses that, where like you have this thing where all of a sudden there's 10 teams, 10 playoff caliber teams, at least, you know, through the play-in. Like if Portland finishes 9th or 10th or something, like at least they have a fair shot to get into the playoffs still. Yeah. So I do think they've addressed that to an extent. And I'm a big fan of the play-in. And again, I'm a big fan of like, just not, it feels like a crapshoot. Whether we're, you know, when we're picking these conferences, like who's going to finish where? And because it's like, it could be like 3 games or 4 games separate, you know, the 1 seed from the 7 seed. Like it really could be like that. It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, look at Atlanta. We love the DeJounte Murray trade for them. I mean, legitimately, this might be the best team that Trae Young has had, and he went in an Eastern
Conference. Oh, for sure.
And he might not. They might be in the play-in.
Or they could be the fucking 3 seed. Like honestly,
exactly. You know, that's how stacked the East.
And that's fun.
And that's how stacked the West is. Like it. This is fun. Like this is the first time in a while. The first time for sure that you and I have been doing this pod where it's just like we've had the last 3 years. We've had 3 different finals matchups. And 3 different winners. Like I want like more stuff like that where we can get excited about it, and we can actually, I can be excited about these teams without having to nerd out. You know, like we're gonna talk about Chicago, man. Can Lonzo Ball? That's a whole other issue. But if he comes back healthy, that backcourt with him and Caruso is really tough. Can DeMar DeRozan do what he did? I mean, dude, there's a lot. Patrick Williams, is he gonna be a break? Like, there's a lot of exciting storylines to talk about where it actually like, holy shit, man, I could see the Bulls being a 4 seed. Maybe being the 3 seed if they get a couple breaks.
They're another team, like, you know, you kind of alluded to earlier with Cleveland, that just like a couple years ago, they were abysmal. They were terrible. And it's like, because there's so much talent in the league and so much talent coming into the league, it makes it easier for these teams that are at rock bottom to rebuild, assuming they do it intelligently. Like, I don't know that Cleveland could have turned things around that fast in an earlier era. I don't know if the Bulls could have turned things around that fast 15 years ago. I don't know that there was enough talent out there to like be able to go get these, you know what I mean? And like, even if you look at Houston, like they're on a super accelerated rebuild. If you look at, they were just the James Harden Rockets, and now they're this whole new thing that's like super promising. And like, and again, that just speaks to the talent that's out there, I think. And also, you know, smart team building. So I think it makes things like that possible, where like teams don't have to be a bottom dweller forever, because there's just so many good players coming in that like you might be able to get a guy in the late lottery that could change your franchise. Or like, you know, there's just all these different trade targets or free agent targets or whatever. There's just more. There's just an abundance of talent now. And I think that's good for everybody. And it's certainly good for league-wide parity. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I think it's going to sort of, if there is no expansion, if they let this play out, I think you're going to kind of see, like, you know, Anthony Edwards, maybe those, I mean, they're always going to be like this for small market. I know we talked about this on your Dame post the other day, but like, hey man, Anthony Edwards, you are now on a legit finals team. Like, you shouldn't be asking out. You know, Cade Cunningham, maybe it's going to be him. Evan Mobley, like, you are on a legit title team now, you know, with Donovan Mitchell and that whole roster. Like, maybe you're not going to ask out now. I just think it'll settle everything down. Because, like, hey, man, because I think these superstars, more than anything, because, you know, I think it's been the trend in the league where, hey, we're going to get our rookie max. We're going to kind of get our stats, get our numbers, get paid. And then all of a sudden, it's we want to win. Well, now maybe these guys are going to look around and be like, hey, I got my stats. I got my money. And holy shit, dude, I can win with these guys around me.
Yeah.
Because look at this. Maybe the six, like you just alluded to in the 80s, I'm not saying it's going to be like Hall of Fame talent that's on the bench, but like, hey man, our six man could be a number two option on so-and-so's teams, but we got him and he's going to help us in the playoffs. Like, I love that for the league. I fucking love it. And I don't want to see that.
No, it's good. It's good. It's good for the small markets. That's a good point. Like, naturally they're going to have a better teams and a better shot at competing at a high level. Like, I think New Orleans is a great example with Zion, just like you just said, like, oh shit, like, wait, we're actually good. Like, really good. Like, this team, they looked like, you know, a top 15, top 12 team probably in the NBA by the end of last season. Like, we saw how well they played against Phoenix, and we saw what they did, like, when they finally got healthy and after they got CJ McCollum and Larry Nance. Like, and then you look at them this year and it's like, shit, this could be like a 50-win team. And it's like, that's a small market that had traded away their franchise player a couple years ago. And like, and look where they are now. Like, they could even be like a fringe contender. You know, I don't think it would be insane to say they could be like the 4 or 5 in the West. I think they really could be good. And yeah, Cleveland, another, like, there's Portland could be really good. So yeah, I think it's, that's another good part of it where, like, cause if there's only so much talent in the league, you know, and it's always going to gravitate toward the bigger markets, then the small markets just get the short end. But when there's an abundance, you know, everybody eats. And I think we're starting to see that. Like, we're not all the way there, but I could see a couple years down the road where, like, it's a really fucking dope league, like, even doper than it is now. Because, I mean, if you look at the recent drafts, like, I think that's a really good thing to look at. They're all deep. You're not seeing it the way that it used to be where, like, 4 or 5 of the top 10 guys are just going to be busts. Like, that's how it always was. And it's not like that anymore. 2019 was a sneaky deep draft. 2020 was super deep. Like, 2021, great draft. You know, like, this past draft looks really good. Like, the next one's going to be great. Like, it's, I don't know, man. It's we're just seeing a big influx of talent where it's just more and more, a higher percentage of the kids drafted are like, are long-term NBA players. And I think that's a great thing.
I would say this too, on top of what you said, I agree with everything you said. They're also going to the right teams. Like, Scotty Barnes is perfect for Toronto. Evan Mobley is perfect for Cleveland. You know, like, I like where everybody is going. I thought Chet was going to be perfect for OKC. I think Paolo was perfect for Orlando. Like, I like the fit for, like, every Nathan and I talked about this draft. We talked about this. Like, the fit for a lot of these guys going is perfect. And, like, I don't want – I don't know, man. I just don't want to – we spent over almost 25 minutes on this. I just don't want to see that go. I know it's inevitable. Yeah. It's going to happen. I get it. But I am going to, like you, definitely enjoy these next couple of years before it happens, when the league is just this talent-rich and it's spread out evenly over all these teams. I'm just going to enjoy the hell out of it. Like, League Pass for me, it was fun last year. It's going to be even funner this year. Because it's like, oh, man, I really want to see – like, I know I keep talking about Orlando. I want to see Font and Paolo. Yeah. I want to see them
play. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely. Like, for all these teams, like, Utah might be – I don't know, but for the most part,
they're probably gonna be
kind of a tough watch. But even then, it's like, well, let's see. Like, Lowry marketing might go nuts. Like, Colin Sexton just being able to do whatever he wants. Like, they could be fun. But yeah, if you look back to, like, you know, when I first started getting League Pass in like 2009, 2010, and it's like some of those Bobcats teams. Like, there were teams that you just had no reason to watch. And that's now it's like, you, oh, the Pistons are like the third worst team in the league, or the Magic are like the third worst team in the league, but like, they're super fun to watch and they play good basketball and they're in competitive games. So it's like, they might be losing. This was like the Pacers last year. They lost a ton of close games. Like, you might be losing these games, but they're not just like 40-point blowouts necessarily. And now that we're kind of over all the COVID weirdness and like all these absences and weird games and like weird players playing, like, now that everything is kind of back to normal in the NBA, I think we're in for a really, really good season coming up. Like, I think we're – because even last season had a little touch of COVID with guys missing games. And not that that won't happen going forward, but I think we're mostly over that as far as the NBA is concerned. And so that, with just the talent level, I think we're just going to be like, damn. And again, I think one of these, like, lower-tier teams could really make some noise if they want to. They have the talent to do it, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I am – I agree with everything that you said, man. And it's going to kind of suck that it's going to happen, but, you know, it kind of is what it is. But let's get to the team, dude. Larry Hughes, Cleveland Cavaliers. Yes, I think that, especially in the Central Division, they probably won the offseason. It was kind of rumored that they were involved. It looked like it was going to be the New York Knicks, but the Cleveland Cavaliers sent the Utah Jazz, Lauri Markkanen, Okachi Ajabi, probably got that wrong, Colin Sexton, who Utah just immediately signed to an extension, and 3 unprotected first-round picks, 2025, 2027, and 2029, and 2 pick swaps, 2026 and 2028. As I said, Sexton agreed to a 4-year, $72 million deal with the Utah Jazz. Cleveland, though, man, they are going to be loaded. I mean, they obviously got Darius Garland. They got Jared Allen. They got Evan Mobley. And you throw in Donovan Mitchell. That is going to be one hell of a team to watch. I think it all, a lot of it is going to depend on Evan Mobley. And I have no doubt that Evan Mobley is on the right trajectory to be a superstar. I think if you told me a year ago, Brett, or a year from now, Brett, that Evan Mobley was the best player on the Cleveland Cavaliers, I would not be surprised at all. I actually think it's kind of good for Donovan Mitchell because I think he might be better suited as a second option rather than the first option. But this team is going to be very fun to watch. And you know what, man? They're going to be fun to watch for a very, very long time. Donovan Mitchell still has a couple years left on his deal. Evan Mobley obviously was just a rookie last season, and I have no doubt that, you know, in a couple, 3-4 years from now, he's going to sign the rookie max extension. And Cleveland is going to have a squad for a while. And it is going to be very, very fun. I love what they've done this offseason. They set themselves up to be really good for a really long time. And I love what they did. Give me your thoughts on Cleveland, Brett.
Yeah, like you said, man, they're going to be good for a long time. Like, all of those four main guys are under team control for a few years. So this is like, this core is pretty locked in. It's going to be fun, man. There's obvious questions like what exactly is it going to look like? Because you have these two super small guards and these 2 7-footers. So it's like a really interesting lineup balance. But I see no reason why it can't work. I mean, I think Mobley and Allen represent an optimal pairing with Garland and Mitchell, especially on defense. They can obviously erase pretty much every mistake that there's going to be. So, and then also you have to have Isaac Okoro in there as well, who's another high caliber defender. So it's like, you know, you could say that Garland and Mitchell are going to get eaten alive because they're kind of small guards that certainly aren't known for their defense. But when you have Okoro, Mobley and Allen out there, I don't think it's too big of a concern.
It's perfect, like, it's perfect. Jared Allen is right there to have their back on everything. It's perfect.
So they were smart to do it. You know, it makes sense. It's like, hey, we can get this guy that, you know, we feel like we're one piece away. We can get this guy that's going to make us a contender, you know, in the next couple years. And we've got the roster infrastructure to make it work. You know, we've got the kind of reinforcements behind him that we need to make it work. So, like, I don't know that – I didn't like the fit of him in New York. Like, I felt like that was just the Knicks trying – just we're desperate for a star. Let's just go get the one that's available. You know what I mean? With the Cavs, like, the fit actually does make some sense. So it's going to be interesting to see how the two guards, like, space for each other. That's going to be a big storyline, I think. You know, what they look like off ball. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I've looked at it before. And Garland's off-ball numbers were real nice next to Sexton. But then when Sexton got hurt, obviously – he became a lot more ball dominant out of necessity, and his outside shooting numbers, kind of his catch and shoot dipped a little bit. And Mitchell's always been pretty good. I think he had a little dip last season, but I think that the two of them playing together and their respective gravities are going to open up some nice looks for one another on the perimeter. Cause they're both great shooters. Like, if you just look at it in a vacuum, it's like Darius Garland's a great shooter. Donovan Mitchell is a great shooter. Like, I don't necessarily care about the 3-point percentage from last year or whatever. Like, that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't necessarily determine what kind of shooter you are. And I think those guys with sufficient space can be lethal out there. So, but that's going to be a big storyline. It's going to be a big thing to keep an eye on. Like, obviously when you're running a jumbo lineup with two bigs and at three with, in say, a Coro that's maybe not known as a shooter quite yet.
Hey man, they got Robin Lopez too. They got Robin Lopez.
Yeah. Nice pickup, man. Like, really a high quality backup center. I mean, I like that addition a lot. I like a lot of the other things they've done. I like that they brought back Rubio.
We haven't even mentioned Kevin Love. He's still on the team too.
Sixth man of the year runner up. They're another super deep team. You know, like, if you look at their bench, okay, so we know the starters. It's almost certainly a Coro, and then obviously the big four, or the half big, half small four. But then off the bench, yeah, you've got Kevin Love. You've got Ricky Rubio, right? Like, you've got Caris LeVert, like, who we haven't even mentioned. Big-time scorer. You know, you've got some good role players like Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade. And then you've got Robin Lopez. Like, they're a really deep team. Like, they've got 11 or 12 rotation-caliber NBA players. So even, you know, in the face of a couple of injuries, I think they could still have a pretty deep rotation. They signed Howell Neto. So they I mean, they've they've got a lot of good players, man. And they're just another example of what we were talking about earlier with the talent depth in this league. Like, they could go like 12 deep and they're solid. So it's not just that starting five, which is so spectacular on paper and so exciting. It's really the whole thing, man. They've got a solid bench too. But I mean, I'm optimistic. I really think it's going to work with Mitchell and Garland. I think they're going to benefit each other tremendously. And I think the thing we really have to factor in is that Mobley could legitimately be like a top 10, 15 player next
season. Could, man. Let's be honest. We'll talk about it more on the preview. Like, their ceiling for how far they can get as a team is Evan Mobley's ceiling. He's going to be the guy to take him there. And like I said earlier, we haven't seen any evidence that he can't be that guy. Granted, it's a big expectations going into year two, but dude, I think the dude's going to be legit, man. I think he's going to be very, very good.
He could be like the next Tim Duncan, like the modern day Tim Duncan, like Tim Duncan with like a handle and like a 3-point shot, like for real. Like, that's the type of player he could be, like the modern version of that, like that, a franchise big. Like, there was this, I think it was a survey of NBA GMs or something that came out recently, and it was like, which players under 25 would you want to build a team around? And it was, of course, like, you know, Luka, Tatum, I think Ja maybe was third. And then Evan Mobley was fourth. And that was one where people were like, that seems high for Mobley. And I'm like, I think that kind of seems low. Like, I don't know if I'd rather build around Ja than Mobley. Like, I'm that high on Mobley. Like, he's really, really special. I think he's actually pretty underrated right now. As great as he was as a rookie, I still don't know that people quite grasp how good and not just how good, how valuable he is with his skill set. So that's obviously a big part of the calculus for Cleveland. They're expecting a jump from him, and they're expecting this team to be great. And that's why they did the trade. If they didn't believe that this would make them a contender, they wouldn't have done it. And that ties into where I'm not that worried about what they gave up, because I don't think those picks are going to be that great. And I'm not the biggest Sexton fan. I don't think he would have fit in that well with this Cavs team. I don't think they wanted to pay him a lot of money long term.
Right.
Markkanen's a nice player. He was great for them, but it's not like you can't go on without him. I'm not worried about what they gave up either. I don't think they paid that steep of a price by any means. These are a couple of late first round picks and a couple of swaps that the Jazz probably won't want, because the Jazz are going to be worse than the Cavs, right?
I still don't understand to this day why Danny Ainge didn't make that deal with the Knicks. Because if you put Donovan Mitchell on the Knicks, like, the Knicks are going to be bad for what they would have had to give him up. Like, especially with that roster, I think they would have been a fun team, but they're certainly going to be worse than the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, I know the Jazz got a lot of picks, but that trade, to me, I have no idea what they were thinking. I really don't. I would love to. Oh, I'm sure we'll get it right before the season comes out, or we'll get a podcast puff piece, like, kind of explaining why they did it. I would have.
I don't know, unless they. I don't know, because maybe they don't believe in this working. They think Cleveland's going to be bad, but it's like, why would you? You couldn't think that.
Yeah,
like, I think everybody that looks at this team is like, I mean, this is a team that could be the best team in the East. Like, it could be. It would not. It honestly wouldn't surprise me, because there's injuries that could happen to other teams. There's a lot that could happen, or they just fucking come out of the gate like 17-3 and just roll. Like, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it could happen. Like, that, the potential is there for them to be really special right off the bat. You know, we haven't done our predictions. I don't know. I probably would have them around like the 4-5 range, but they could be better than that. Or, of course, they could be a little worse, like we talked about before. But the potential is there. They certainly believe in it. That's why they did the deal. And I don't hate it from the Jazz's perspective, but I love it from Cleveland's. There's no doubt. They took a swing when they were one piece away, and that's what you love to see. You know, they went for it.
I'm going to go so far as to say, before we move on to the Pistons here, that Cleveland definitely won the offseason, in my opinion. I absolutely – this is a home run.
Yeah.
It's not just because you get Donovan Mitchell. It's because all these guys have multiple years left on their deals. That's why it's like, you are going to be good now for a really, really long time. And
the next 3 years at least. I think these guys are all under team control. Like,
yeah, and Donovan Mitchell, if you really want to go back to New York and you want to play for your hometown team, are you really going to leave Evan Mobley? Like, you're gonna
oh no,
you're gonna leave this dude.
No,
like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and at that point, if you're Cleveland, then you can trade him in the last year of his deal and get some of those picks back. and get even more help. Like, this is just
exactly
a home run for Cleveland. Home run.
Couldn't agree more. Yep. It's an awesome trade for them. And they're one of the, if not the most exciting team, you know, to watch this coming season. They're certainly one of them. So yeah, they great offseason. And again, I liked some of the smaller moves they did too. Like, they were already doing all right. And then the big splash. And
I love
now,
the
Rubio
signing, man.
He was so good for them. He was so, so good. And they were so good with him when he was on the court. And then obviously they traded him for LeVert, but then to get him back, and they paid a decent number for him, but I think it's worth it. They value him a lot. He's one of the best mentors in the league and arguably the best backup point guard. I think that's what he was playing like before he got hurt. He's the best backup point guard in the league. And yeah, Lopez, he's no JaVale McGee, but he's a great backup center. I think LeVert is the guy that could maybe get moved. We're like, I like him on paper as their sixth man. But, you know, if the fit just isn't working, he's a guy that could maybe, you know, have some value and they could reshape things a little bit. But I'm inclined to think this is going to be their squad going forward, at least for this season. And they're going to have a lot of success.
I agree. Let's move on to the Detroit Pistons. Shout out to Molly Hunter. You are the only Detroit Pistons fan. Fuck the Lakers. I'll say that for you. Get that in there for you. I know you would want me to. I thought they had a solid offseason. They obviously re-signed Marvin Bagley to a 3-year, $37 million extension. I think their draft pick is a home run. I like Jaden Ivey. I just think if you're the Detroit Pistons, you just continue to build on what you're doing. You're probably, I'm just going to be honest with you, you're probably not the worst team in the division, but I think you look at Milwaukee, Cleveland, maybe you can catch up to Chicago. I think Indiana is definitely the worst team in that division. But yeah, man, you just keep building and you got to be excited, dude. You got two dudes now. You got Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham. There's your backcourt right there. That should be your backcourt for the next 7 years, and you just got to keep building on that. All you want to do is, if you're the Pistons, is just see progress. And yeah, I thought their offseason was pretty solid. Again, though, I'm so high on Jaden Ivey. I love that pick for them. I think that's going to be a fun ass backcourt, and I think they're going to be a scrappy team. I don't know how many games they're going to win, but it's going to be a fun team for Detroit.
Oh yeah, man. Absolutely. I'll tell you, at Summer League, I got to see Jaden Ivey. And I was actually watching the game with Molly. She had saved some great seats. We were like center court, I don't know, 5-6 rows back, something like that. And so obviously it was really cool to watch that game with the biggest Pistons fan I've ever met. But man, that was the game Jaden Ivey got hurt in. They were playing against the Wizards. He landed on Isaiah Todd's foot, shooting a three-pointer. He played 5 minutes before he got injured. And it's the most spectacular individual 5 minutes certainly of this past summer league, and maybe that I've seen, you know, in the 5-6 years I've been going to summer league. I think he had like 11 points.
I praise.
Oh man. I told Molly when he got hurt, I'm like, it fucking sucks that he got hurt, but it probably saved me from saying some really crazy shit about Jaden Ivey. Cause I was getting so high on him. Like, it was just like, he hit a couple of pull up threes. I think he was attacking the rim like he does so well. He had a couple of crazy passes, was just in total control of the game. I know it's summer league, but it was like, the energy, it was crazy, man. And I'm glad he's okay. It was just a sprain. Like, he's obviously going to be fine for training camp and everything. But it was a bummer, though, because it was unreal, man. It was an unreal 5-6 minutes, whatever it was, from Jaden Ivey. So needless to say, like, I'm sold on him. I really like the fit next to Cade. Obvious home run draft pick. Everybody thought he was going to go 4. Kings. I'm not going to make a Kings joke because I don't think Keegan Murray is necessarily a bad pick. I certainly would have taken Ivy, but maybe the Kings are just like, hey, we already have these guards that we love and Fox, Mitchell, whatever. We're going to go with a bigger guy.
Keegan looked good in summer league too, man, though.
He looked great. He looked great. There's no doubt. Everything I've seen from him, he's looked great. But for the Pistons, for Ivy to sort of fall into your lap there at 5 is beautiful because he makes a lot of sense next to Cade.
We didn't even talk about Jaylen Duren, dude.
I mean, there's a lot to talk about, but yeah, just the Ivy piece of it is very exciting. Like, that was the crown jewel of their offseason, yeah. I think, without a doubt. And then yeah, Duren, they, you know, to be able to get both Ivy and Duren, to get both of those guys in the draft is crazy, because like, Duren was somebody who I think people thought could go 6, 7, 8. Like, he could have sort of been a surprise pick in that range just based on his, you know, his upside. And again, Ivy was projected as a pretty consensus, like top four pick. So to be able to get both those guys with, you know, out of the fifth pick, and I think it was that Bucks first rounder that they traded to get Durin that they got for Portland in the Jeremy Grant trade, which is another part of the offseason that we can talk about. But like, you know, I think first and foremost, they had a fucking great draft, like an A to A plus.
A plus, dude. I'm with you.
It's them in Houston are my two biggest winners of the draft. Let's give them both A pluses. Fuck it. You know, like I think Detroit absolutely killed the draft, and we can get into some of the other moves that they made as well, though, for sure.
Yeah, I think if you're a Pistons fan, you just want to keep building. I thought, like you said, maybe the free agent signings weren't the best, but you just absolutely killed the draft. You guys are good. You're going to be fine. Keep building on what you got. And you got potential for sure two studs, potentially three studs to build around. I love what they did, man. I can't say enough good things about what they did.
The only thing I didn't love was Marvin Bagley for 3 years and $38 million.
You shook your head when I
it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like, I know that, you know, he was a number two pick. I know he's still super young. I know he played pretty well for them after coming over last season, like probably the best basketball of his NBA career. I know he's a lob threat, which is a nice thing for Cade to have. He's kind of an athletic big. He can get buckets, decent rebounder. Like, I get that, but at the same time, like, that's, you know, another team we're going to talk about is the Pacers, and they signed Jalen Smith for 3 years, $15 million. I think Jalen Smith is a better NBA player than Marvin Bagley. For Marvin Bagley to get 3 and 38, I'm just like, when you already have Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren and then a couple of vet big men in Olynyk and Nerlens Noel, it's like, why overpay for Bagley? Like, what? Maybe they see something in him.
You don't want to lose the asset. It's a tradable contract. It's a very tradable contract.
Yeah,
tradable.
Yeah, it's in the number wise. It's pretty tradable. It's one of those ones that kind of fits into a lot of deals. I get that, but like, I don't know. I think maybe they see something in him that I don't see. I just don't believe in him as that level of NBA player. I think he's an NBA player, but I don't think he's a $12, $13 million a year guy. Like, I don't know. That, to me, that felt like an overpay. And then they also signed Kevin Knox, which, yeah, I mean, I don't feel as bad about that one because I think that was only 2 years, $6 million. Reclamation projects, these guys. And then and then, like I said, I think they brought in Olynyk last year, and then they got Noel from the Knicks as well, who actually could help them out, and Alec Burks. So they're kind of this interesting mix of young guys and, like, and I mean, when you talk about Noel and Burks, like, those are quality veterans. Like, if you've got those guys coming off your bench, like, I don't know, man. I think one of these teams is going to be pretty competitive, and I think the Pistons are in the running to be that team where, like, maybe they're not a playoff team, but, like, if they won 38, even 40 games, like, it wouldn't shock me.
They're scrappy, man. They're going to be a tough team. They're going to be tough. You're not going to be able to roll into Detroit, or Detroit's not going to be able to roll in, and you're going to win by 25. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
It's going to be a tough game for a lot.
They have a lot of tough players. Cade is tough. Killian is super tough defensively, especially. Obviously, like, Isaiah Stewart, right? Like, Durin is a beast. Like, Sadiq Bey is a tough kid. Like, so they've definitely got, it fits their identity, like that sort of bad boys identity. Like, they almost kind of have that in a way. Like, you can sort of see what they're building and what they value. I think they're a team that needs more shooting. It would have been good to see them bring in a little more of that, because there's only, you know, Bay's a pretty good shooter. Livers is a great shooter. Olynyk can shoot. Stewart's working on the three. But I feel like that's kind of their glaring weakness, is just outside shooting. Now, you know, Cade could get a lot better. I think he's a much better shooter than he showed as a rookie. But that's the one thing where I would have liked to have seen them address it. They did get Burks. Burks can shoot it. So I don't know. Maybe they have enough. Because, like, you want to develop these young guys, but you also want them to be developed in a functional ecosystem. You know, you want to have proper spacing. That's the thing I worry about with the OKC guys, is that these last couple of years, like, that team just offensively really hasn't been functional. It's just been ugly. It's been so poorly spaced. So it's like, yeah, you don't want to like give these young guys minutes to these vets, but you do want to play some vets just to make it a more functional offense. I think that's a better environment for development for these young guys. And I think the Pistons are a good example of a team that could be sort of walking that line where like you're playing guys like Burks and Noel, maybe even like Corey Joseph, like just these solid veterans, Olynyk, who can pass the ball, can shoot the ball. And then you're mixing them with these young guys that you really want to develop. And then Cade's just going to be running the show. And I think maybe as an outside shot at an all-star team, like, so they're in an interesting spot. Like, they're not necessarily going to be that bad. And I'd say overall, really nice offseason. Like, probably a top five offseason when you factor everything
in. And it's all because they nailed their draft, man. They hit another draft, dude. Or maybe
it's mostly the draft.
Somebody. They're
you get an A-plus draft. Like, you had a really good offseason, especially if you're a younger rebuilding team. So
you'll be fine.
I'm very excited about that.
Your Pistons will be fine. Get excited. You got to.
Oh, it's got a great spot. Great time to be a Pistons fan. It really is. Like, they've got a lot to work with. So they're really exciting.
Let's go on to the team kind of across Lake Michigan, that is the Chicago Bulls. They had an interesting offseason. I'm going to get to kind of what their big key is in a minute, but they signed Andre Drummond, they signed Goran Dragic, and probably the biggest thing that happened to them was they re-signed Zach LaVine at 5 years, $215 million.
Max LaVine. Yeah.
He definitely deserves it, but damn, that's a lot of money. When you actually have to say it out loud, it's a lot of money.
It is.
To me, man, we have to talk about this. It's obviously not going to be a preview, but we have to talk about the Lonzo Ball thing, because this is starting to become a thing where a knee injury that was supposed to last like 6 weeks is now lasted like 6 months. Nobody knows if this dude is going to be healthy. I just read an article the other day where some days he wakes up and he plays and he feels no discomfort. He feels great. Other days he wakes up and plays and, dude, he's got a lot of discomfort in there. That's not good. And I think whatever the Chicago Bulls are going to be, they need Lonzo Ball to be out there on the court. We saw what happened when he wasn't on the court. Mm-hmm. I alluded to at the top of the podcast, Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso are at the very least a top five defensive backcourt in the NBA, which is really – you need that when you have DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine on their team. I thought they kind of addressed the rebounding issue with Andre Drummond. I don't know how much he's going to be able to play. But, I mean, at least you know when he's out there, you'll be able to get some rebounds. I don't know about anything else that he's going to be able to do. And I also, as I said at the top of the pod – you know, when we were talking about the depth of some of these teams, another year of Patrick Williams, he's got to start to develop here. If they can hit that, then I think Chicago is okay. But I mean, it was a weird offseason for them. I know, you know, shout out to our guy Riley. He wanted them to get Rudy Gobert. They didn't get Rudy Gobert. They weren't really involved in anything else. They got smoked by Milwaukee in the playoffs. I thought it was an okay offseason. Obviously, you want your franchise player, Zach LaVine.
Yeah, because imagine if they had lost him, that was good. I mean, that was like kind of like you said, the highlight of their offseason for sure. I mean, yes, it's a lot of money, but you had to bring Zach back. But yeah, man, they last year when Lonzo and Caruso were both like, they sucked without those guys. Like, they were just a bad basketball team.
Yeah, they can't play defense. Yeah.
They were bad. Like, so much of their success was because they were a surprisingly good defense, and so much of that was the backcourt, Lonzo and Caruso out on the perimeter wreaking havoc. So, like, first and foremost, like, they're going to need both of those guys healthy for them to have a chance, you know, at coming out of the East or whatever. And then, yeah, I think the other big key is a jump from Patrick Williams to where he really – and I think he's going to do that. Like, I have a lot of faith in him. He's been one of my favorite players since before he came in the league. He showed some really, I mean, his shooting number, his 3-point shooting was elite last season. Sky high. I forget what he was at, but it was like, I think he shot over 50%. Now it was a small sample because he came back late in the season, but he really, you know, he looks like a great shooter. He looked like, worked on his handle a lot this summer. Everything I've seen from him, he's really handling the ball well. He's shooting it well. I think he's big time. So I'm not as worried about that. I think he's going to do what he has to do. It's the Lonzo thing is very worrisome. I read that same thing as you. And so it sounds like, yeah, some days it feels fine. Some days something flares up. Who knows, you know, but they need him. badly. And then you just have to hope that, you know, LaVine, if LaVine can be, because LaVine last year was banged up. Like he was dealing with a knee injury. He played through it for a lot of the season. He had surgery after the season, I believe. But if he could be the guy he was in 2021, where he had his, you know, just true breakout, crazy efficiency season, if he could be that guy, like, this is their pathway. If they want to make the finals, say, like, they need LaVine to be the guy he was 2 years ago. They need DeMar to be the guy he was last year. He can't take a step back. They need Lonzo and Caruso healthy, and they need Patrick Williams to take a jump. If all those things happen, they're a real, and I mean, it's like, it's not out of the question, but like, I really think for them to be, you know, a contender, that's what needs to happen. They're realistic. I won't say it's likely that all that's going to fall into place, but to me, those are kind of the keys. And then, yeah, I mean, the Derek Jones Jr., they re-signed as well for the same contract as Drummond. I think it's like 2 years, $6.4 million with a player option on the second year. I don't hate that. I don't know. It seems like they need shooting, and he's not a shooter. I think Patrick Williams is going to have to really work as a floor spacer. Like, I feel like they're a shooter short. I feel like I could say that about a lot of teams. And then the Drummond thing, like, I think at that price, man, that's a fine value, you know, 2 years, $6 million. Like, he's an all-time great rebounder. He'll flash stuff defensively sometimes. Like, he'll make impressive plays defensively. I don't know, maybe in the right system, he could be a plus defender. I don't know. Terrible rim finisher, weird player, but like, he's one of those guys where it's like, if you could use him the right way, like if you could harness him, if you could optimize him, maybe he could be a really fucking good value at like just above the league minimum. But like, they neglected to use their full non-taxpayer mid-level. Like, they could have got like a $10 million a year player, and they didn't. They used a portion of it to get Drummond. I would say they've had one of the most disappointing off seasons. One bright spot I'll say lastly about the Bulls is that they did draft Dalen Terry out of Arizona with the 18th pick. Nice player, fits their identity. Certainly doesn't fill the need of a shooter, but he's, I won't say he's like a Lonzo Ball type of guard, but he is a long guard with some playmaking who's defensive minded. I like him. So they, you know, the thing with the Bulls, like, they've got a really nice guard rotation. If they're fully healthy, when you look at Lonzo, Caruso, Kobe White, Dragic, who you mentioned, they brought in Dalen Terry, Ayo Dosunmu, the rookie from last year, who's fantastic, who I think should probably start if Lonzo's out. So that's like six quality guards. So their guard rotation's nice. They're just a little shallow up front when it comes to the depth. They're a weird team. Disappointing offseason. If everything goes right, they could be really good. If they aren't healthy, and if some of these guys don't make the jump that I want them to make, then they might not be that good. So I think they've got a fair amount of variance in how their season could turn out. I don't want to like count them out, but I'm just not that excited about them just because it was an objectively disappointing offseason, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think they had a chance to build on what they did last year. And like you said, just you naming all that stuff off, like there's a lot that has to go right for Chicago to, I think, even get back to where they were last year.
Because look at how much better all these – look at the Celtics got better. Like the Cavs got better. Like, you know, the East is going to be tough, man.
Yeah, it is. Let's talk about Indiana. I think that they are going to, and I think that they're okay with it, they're going to be one of the worst teams in the NBA. If I have to hear one more Russell Westbrook, Buddy Hield, Miles Turner rumor, I might just
get it over with, though.
Yeah, I might just jump off the building. I'm just so annoyed by it. They're a weird team, man. I do not understand for the life of me the Malcolm Brogdon trade. And I know kind of the thing is, well, if they could have got something better from Malcolm Brogdon, then they would have done it. I just don't know how. It's almost like they just gave him to Boston. You know what I mean? Like,
pretty much.
Boston didn't give up any core players, nothing like that. Yeah. That was really weird. We talked about it a season ago. I love the Tyrese Halliburton trade for them. I think he is definitely a franchise guard, a cornerstone guard. Sorry, Court Tafoya, your team fucked up. I don't know what they were thinking. I like it. And let's be honest, dude, I just read this kind of before we were coming on as we were prepping for this. The Indiana Pacers have not had a top nine pick in an NBA draft since 1989. And I like Benedict Mathurin. I think he could be really good for him. Obviously, when you pick someone that high, he can't just be a role player. If those two guys are your building blocks and they're your future and they can live up to their potential, I think Indiana, you should be thrilled with that. They're clearly going to try to do a mini rebuild here. If they can get any – I think that it's just a matter of time before Miles Turner and Buddy Hield are flipped and they're not on that team anymore. The only thing about Indiana that I don't understand is Rick Carlisle being the head coach there, because they are definitely like rebuild. Like, they're not going to be good for, you know, at least 2 years, right? 2 or 3 years. You know, when you just look at not only their own division, but you just look around the Eastern Conference, like, they, to me, if they get a top four pick in the NBA draft next season, I would not be surprised. And I think that's kind of what Indiana wants. As long as Haliburton and Mathurin get better, I think that they're okay with that.
Yeah, no, and I agree. Carlisle seems like a weird fit for like a tanking team. And it's weird that they're tanking. And like, yeah, like you said, they haven't had a top nine pick or whatever, like, because they're always good. Like, they just have not wanted to tank. Like, I don't think their ownership wants to tank. Like, it's just, it's so weird now that we might have a season where the Pacers, the Jazz, and the Spurs are all tanking. And they're like the three most like anti-tank teams in NBA. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the Spurs never tank. Like, they had that 1 year before they drafted Duncan when Robinson got hurt. And then, you know, the Jazz are just perennially like, they don't tank. And same with the Pacers. So that's pretty interesting that we could see all those teams do, you know, bottoming out in the same season. But I do think there's like an outside chance that the Pacers could be a little bit competitive. Like, obviously, like, I expect Turner and Hield to get traded, but like, if they don't, especially Turner, like, if you just, I don't know. I don't really see a world in which they don't trade him, but at the same time, if they don't for whatever reason, all of a sudden, like, on paper, like, you could sort of talk yourself into them being all right, like, being that team that I talked about earlier, like, one of these projected bad teams that's actually pretty competitive that could win like 38 games or something. Like, they could, and a lot of that is Carlisle. But I think most likely you're right. They're going to be, you know, one of the probably five or six worst teams in the league. I think I like the Mathurin pick. Like you said, like, you know, if you're in this position, like, you want to draft a guy that could be a star, and he absolutely has like star upside. I mean, he's a big time scorer, great shooter, very athletic, can get to the rim, can finish above the rim. Like, he has undeniable superstar potential. Like, if 10 years from now we look back and he's one of the, say, three best players in this draft class, it wouldn't surprise me. Like, he has that kind of upside, and I like him at six for them. And then the only other real thing, yeah, the Brogdon, like, the thing, I'll say this about Brogdon, because it does feel like they gave him up for very little. Like, that's just going to be a shitty first round pick from the Celtics. And then, well, Tice and Nesmith. The thing about Brogdon is he has not been healthy, especially for Indiana. Like, he's missed.
I could have told anybody that.
I know. But so that's, you know, you got to factor that into his value when it seems like they gave him up for, it's like, all right, well, we got a first round pick and, you know, Nesmith and Tice for a guy that, who knows how he might miss 50 games.
True.
Like, you know, well,
and to me, though, that's like the first thing. That's the first telltale sign that, you know, that Indiana wants to tank. To not ask for any of Boston's rotation players and said, hey, we want this first round pick, which they'll probably flip sometime later on. You can tell early on what Indiana's trying to do.
And I think they've had a really nice offseason, like, considering what they're trying to do. They took a swing on Ayton. Right? They gave him an offer sheet. Suns matched it, obviously.
Yep.
But now they're left with a ton of cap space. Like, I think they're going to be one of the biggest cap space teams next offseason. Like, maybe second only to, like, the Spurs. I'd have to look at that. But they're up there for sure. They're in the position where they could sign, like, you know, a max player for sure. And then and some additional things as well. Because Turner's coming off the books as well. You know, they could maybe be a destination for like a Westbrook salary dump, and he would come off the books as well. So there's some things they could do to position themselves to really put some nice players around Haliburton soon. This could be an accelerated rebuild. The other big piece of business was Jalen Smith, who, you know, who looked like a lost cause with Phoenix. up until there was some injuries and he got started getting minutes and it was like, okay, this guy can play a little bit. And then he gets traded to Indiana and really starts to shine. He can really shoot the ball. He had a nice season for them. He gives a little bit of rim protection. He's still super young. And I think he could have got more than $5 million a year. But Indiana promised him a starting job. Indiana resurrected his career. I think he probably feels some loyalty to them. So for them to be able to get him at 3 years, 15, feels like a really nice piece of business. He's going to be starting alongside Turner until they eventually trade Turner. And then you have Isaiah Jackson who could step in, who's a very exciting young player in his own right. So between like Isaiah Jackson, Jalen Smith, Halliburton, Duarte, Mathurin, this is an exciting young team. I'd put them in kind of like the Spurs tier, where like maybe ahead of that, if we're talking about like young cores, like the Spurs don't quite have somebody like Halliburton, you know, where they're not in that like potential, probably don't have like a potential superstar. I haven't seen enough from him to say that, but maybe he could be. But they don't have like a Cade. They don't have like a Jalen Green. They're kind of in that Spurs where they just have this solid group of young guys, but they could, you know, they're going to have the cap room to bring in some more pieces in the coming years. And they've got a lot of flexibility. So I like where they're sitting, and it wasn't the most exciting offseason for them. It's not like they got better, but like they don't want to, like you said. They're probably looking at a high draft pick and just developing these young guys. And I think with all that considered, they've done pretty well.
All right, buddy. We got one more team. I got the big ass smile on my face, baby.
Who could it be?
I love what they did, dude. I love their offseason. I love it. I love the Joe Ingles signing because he's not someone that, you know, you need him to be impactful right away. Just a year ago, or not this past year, the year prior before he tore his ACL, he was a runner-up sixth man of the year. He's a career 40-point, three-point shooter. He does everything. I call him the white Chris Middleton. I mean, dude, he is literally what he is. And you look at that Boston series, and Milwaukee was a little bit exposed a little bit with Middleton being out. And you saw a couple of those guys had to step up.
Middleton was injured. I didn't know that. Nobody ever told me that.
Did I? I didn't even say
that. Nobody's mentioned that. I didn't even notice he wasn't there, man.
I bet you didn't, you homer. Milwaukee got kind of exposed for their wing depth a little bit. And I thought it was very important that they solidified that. In the offseason, Joe Ingles obviously isn't going to be as big of a defensive player as Middleton is, but he is a playmaker. And that was a big problem in that Milwaukee-Boston series. They just had nobody else that could put the ball in the bucket. You saw Grayson Allen have to move up. And even though he had the greatest regular season of his career in the NBA, he had a hell of a Bulls series. But, you know, when he had to move up a spot, he just got put in a torture chamber by Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And then, dude, they got my guy, dude. Marjon Beauchamp, dude. Let's fucking go, baby. I fucking love that pick for Milwaukee because he is exactly what they need. I think he's going to be an impactful player on the defensive end right away. I think he's going to be really, really good for them. And he's going to, especially in the regular season, I think that he is going to be able to, you know, you can maybe get rest for Wes Matthews a little bit, rest for Chris Middleton a little bit. I love it. I fucking love that pick. I mean, you were down in summer league. I think he shot 45% from three in summer league. Granted, it's only five games in his summer league, but dude, that gets me excited. I love it. I love the re-signing of Bobby Portis. I love the re-signing of Patrick Connaughton. They're just a deep team, man. I mean, we talk about the Celtics being incredibly deep, and rightfully so. They are, obviously, with Malcolm Brogdon, but Milwaukee is maybe they may be just a little bit notch below Boston, but they're a really, really deep team too, and they're going to be really, really good this season. I thought they had a terrific offseason for the position of that they were in. And yeah, man, dude, I can't complain. As a Bucks fan, I cannot complain one bit on what they did this offseason.
Yeah, man. If Beauchamp could get up to be like a reliable shooter, like you'd have one hell of a player, because that's like his only real weakness. Very athletic, you know, defense first, wing, can get to the rack, can finish. Seems like a great character guy. Like, to get him in the late first round.
He played for your G League Ignite last year, man.
Sure did. Yeah. Yep. I think he was a fantastic pick. I'm excited. And I do think I'm with you. I think he can give them some quality minutes, right off the bat. Cause you know, they don't have a ton of depth at that position necessarily. And especially, yeah, when you look at Matthews, he's getting older. And then, the Ingles thing, like, look, You're talking about an elite, elite, elite shooter. And I think it was 2020-21 was the season he went absolutely crazy, where it was like 67% true shooting. Like truly a historically great shooting season. One of the greatest shooting seasons we've ever seen. That's when he was runner up for Sixth Man of the Year, like you mentioned. If you could promise me, and this is obviously not remotely realistic, but if you hypothetically, if you said you're getting that Joe Ingles.
Oh, I don't think so. I love where you're going.
No, I know. No, there's no way. But I'm saying if you could say that, like from the gate, like he never had the ACL, he's going to be ready for opening day, and he's that guy, I would say pencil them in for the fucking championship. Like,
because
he's the perfect guy. Healthy 2 years ago, Joe Ingles would be the absolute perfect guy for this Bucks team. Shooting, they need it badly. Of course, you know this. He is one of the all-time great shooters in NBA history. And yeah, he's a great passer. Career 21%+ assist rate, you know, was over 5, maybe 6 assists a few seasons. Like a really nice playmaking forward. Not the most athletic guy, but he holds up on defense. He's got really good positional size at about 6'8". Very smart team defender. Like he is the perfect Buck. So like, okay, we're not getting that guy. But what if you could get, and I don't know when he's going to be ready. I'm guessing probably after Christmas.
They think around the All-Star, like right around that.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. Cause that wasn't that long ago that he tore his ACL. So what was it, January or something? So yeah. So yeah, the All-Star break feels probably about realistic. But like, man, if like even say just the playoffs, if you could get 80% of that peak Joe Ingles from a couple years ago. He's just a lesser version of that guy, but he's still the playmaking forward. He's still the great shooter. He's still 6'8". He's still smart. He's still a great teammate. All those things. So like, if you could just get 80% of him, I think he's well worth the taxpayer mid-level at like $6 million. Like I'd like to look at some of the other guys that maybe they could have gotten, but like, I don't know, man, if they can get him back healthy, he's older, but he's not like 39. He's 34, going to be 35 this season. So like,
He's
younger than PJ Tucker. Like he's the same age PJ was when he, was with you guys.
He's perfect, man, because he's not going to be asked to be the sixth man on this team. I mean, like I said, Wes Matthews is going to be back. Serge Ibaka's not going to play that much, but I mean, I think he's going to be a good vet that's going to be there. But Javon Carter, I think I'm expecting a breakout season for Javon Carter in like a
backup. I'm glad they brought him back.
In a backup point guard type of way. I mean, he's going to be able to play defense. I think George Hill is eventually going to get moved, but they still have him. Man, we talked about it 2 years ago when George Hill was on this team. Playing with Giannis, he was the best three-point shooter percentage-wise in the NBA that year. Grayson, as I said kind of at the top, Grayson Allen shot 40% from three last year on 6 attempts a game. And if you can get that with Joe Ingles, who's probably going to be, when he comes back and he's fully healthy, the 7th man on this team, maybe even the 8th man, like – his role is going to be it's going to be good, and I don't want to get into our previews here, but like you look at Boston and you look at Milwaukee, and those two teams are just fucking stacked, right? Like I mean, from 1 to 10, they are just stacked with playmakers on their team, and I just think they're going for it, and I really hope that they both make the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I just love what Milwaukee did. And to me, I said this in a Bucks group chat that I'm in with Beauchamp, and I think that they really, really needed it. If you can, in the playoffs, if you can have him guard, again, not saying he's got to be great or anything or a lockdown defender, but if he can buy you a couple minutes, 3 to 4 minutes each half, hey, man, you can slow down James Harden a little bit, slow down Jimmy Butler, or slow down Jason Terry, just for like a couple minutes a half, I think that is a hell of a fucking win for Milwaukee. I really do.
Yeah.
We talked about it before. They were at their best when they could put PJ Tucker. All right, man, Kevin Durant's going to average 30 against PJ Tucker. That's fine. Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday can go cook on offense then. Like, they need, like, you saw it. You even made the comment. I remember this when Boston and Milwaukee were playing in the playoffs. Wes Matthews was, for a couple of those games, was eating Jason Tatum up, man. And obviously Jason Tatum warmed down and figured some things out.
Yeah, no, he was very impressive though for a couple of those games. Yeah.
There was a time, dude, where you and I were talking, are Jrue Holiday and Wes Matthews the best defensive backcourt in the playoffs right now? Like they were that good. So all those guys, everything I think is reset, and then you add in Beauchamp and Ingles, hopefully a bigger role for Javon Carter. I think Milwaukee,
yeah,
for the position that they were in, had a really nice offseason. You know, they have Giannis, Drew, and Chris Middleton all on max contracts. They're not going to be able to go sign a lot of big names. I really like what they did this offseason.
Yeah, no, and that's it's important to look at it that way. It's like within what they could do. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, yeah, the Bucks, yeah, they weren't going to go sign like a fucking max player. Like, you know, that could be said for a lot of these teams. So you have to look at it within that context for sure. So, like, maybe it doesn't sound that interesting, like, at first glance. Like, okay, they got Joe Ingles. They drafted a late first rounder, Marjon Pochettino. Like, it's not like the most exciting, but yeah, considering where they're at as a team and what they could have done, like, I think it was pretty solid. And yeah, the Javon Carter thing's nice. I was like screaming for them to like, yo, play him more, man. Like,
oh, don't even get me started, dude. Oh, don't even get me started. Yes.
They're playing George Hill over. They're playing like George Hill. And I was like, where's Javon Carter at? He's nice, man. Yeah. I like him as their backup point guard, really. And the Portis thing, like, that's one where, what was it? Was it 4 years, 49?
Yeah. Solid deal. So, dude. Like,
solid. Now, I think some people definitely have said like it might be a little bit of an overpay, but to them, I would say this: like, you could look at it as 4 years, 49, or you could look at it as 6 years, 57, or yeah, whatever, with the, you know, with a championship in there,
yeah,
with a ring,
yeah.
So you could look at it as that because they had him at a bargain the last two seasons. So like, if you look at the whole 6 years with Portis, then he comes in at a pretty good price and he already helped you get a championship. So like, I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Look at the malleability of the roster just a little bit, right? So you have Brooke Lopez played 13 games last regular season. And you saw when Chris Middleton went out against Chicago, obviously, I think it worked one game against Boston, and then Boston's a really smart team. They figured it out real quick. But hey man, we can trot out as our front court Giannis, Brooke Lopez, and Bobby Portis.
Oh yeah.
Against some of these smaller teams, obviously that can't work against Boston. Maybe you can get a game or two out of Philly, but just that malleability to be able to play a couple minutes like that,
yeah,
that's for Milwaukee, I'm saying that's huge. And we talked about at the top of this podcast about fit, right? Like you just said, maybe to another team, Bobby Portis isn't worth that, but to Milwaukee, he's 100% worth that. You know what I'm saying? Like, Beauchamp, I think, is going to have an opportunity to have a Herb Jones-like impact with Milwaukee. He's not going to get the minutes that Herb Jones got.
I was thinking Lou Dort. Remember Lou Dort, his rookie year when he was with OKC and they made the playoffs. They had, yeah, Chris Paul. They played Houston, and he was like the Harden stopper in the first round.
Yes.
It was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yes.
And like, I could see that kind of role for Beauchamp. Like, it's not unprecedented to see rookies have major impact defensively. Herb Jones, yeah, it's a shining example, but Dort is another guy that just kind of emerged. And then in the playoffs, it's like, damn, like, this dude is like locking up James Harden. Like, yeah. And so maybe Beauchamp, like, he, I don't know, man. Like, I think you could say he's the best wing defender in that draft. I think it's like Sohan maybe, or him, but like, he's in that conversation.
The fit
where, like,
is perfect though, Brett, right? The fit,
it, yeah,
he cuts it well. Is. Like you said, he's got to work on his 3-point shooting a little bit, but the fit and the defensive intensity that he's going to bring, like, Budenholzer, yeah, is going to love that right away.
Oh yeah. He's great. He seems like a great kid. Yeah, man, I'm pretty excited. And like, you brought up Lopez, and like, that reminds me of an important point with the Ingles thing. Is like, that dude, like, I couldn't believe he came back last season.
That dude
at his size and age with that injury, like, I don't know. I was like, is he ever gonna really be Brook, yeah, Lopez again? And he comes back and he's fucking great. So, and I think that's something you guys are known for, the Bucks, is your training staff. Like, you've got
Wookie, dude. She's elite, good, dude. She's good.
Elite. So you sign a Joe Ingles coming off an ACL. He might be more valuable to you,
yeah,
than another team because you've got this elite training. You're like, okay, we can get this guy back. We can get him back. Like, we've got an ACL expert. Like, we can get this dude back to his, close to his previous form. And if we can do that by even the playoffs, like, then we've got a guy that's worth more than what we paid for him. So, like, I think that's an important thing to factor in too, is like, when you have a great training staff, like, guys coming off injuries are more valuable to you than they would be to a lot of other teams.
Yeah, man. And just to kind of put a bow on this podcast, man, I really do think, to go back to the top, man, we are in a golden age of just smart NBA teams. And you look at those, mm-hmm, I do think in terms of the entire NBA, I think Boston and Milwaukee are pretty much far ahead, but look, just the roster building that they did this season with Malcolm Brogdon, and you throw in what Milwaukee did, And then you throw in Philly, you know, Daryl Morey, what he did with James Harden.
They had a great offseason.
They did, man. It's so fun to see all these smart teams just keep getting smarter and keep adding. Yeah.
Bar keeps getting raised where it's like, if you ain't smart, like that's why like Cleveland's got Kobe Altman's a really smart dude. I've talked about it a lot. Like just an objectively smart guy and obviously a very smart basketball mind, like who, yeah, maybe got up to a little bit of a rough start with what he had to work with, but like he did great. And it's like, and so you look at these other teams where it's like, I'm not saying Miami and Chicago aren't smart. Chicago didn't look super smart this offseason, but like
neither did Miami.
I'm using them as examples because they were two really good teams last year that didn't really get better at all. And, but you know, barring like some big development, like, you know, improvement from a guy like Bam or a guy like Pat Williams or Hero, whatever, that some of their younger guys. But like, when you look at what Philly has done, what Boston has done, Milwaukee, not the most exciting offseason. Like, I don't know that I could say they're a team that got a ton better, but they were smart. Cleveland got way better. So like teams like Miami and Chicago are kind of like you got to step your game up. Like you can't just win 46 games like the Bulls did or like Miami, you know, the one seed and then just be like, all right, like we're just going to kind of run it back. Like that's tough to do when you have so much smart team building going on around you. Like the standards are just really high right now. I think it's easy for teams to jump and it's easy for teams to fall off, but there's never going to be that big of a gap because of this parity that we're seeing that we talked about. So yeah, golden age for sure, man. This is awesome. Like, I've never loved the NBA, I don't think, as much as I do right now. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. I can't wait to get started. We're going to be out of here. We're going to do some season previews. We're going to do some prop bets. We're going to do some over-unders starting next week. We're probably going to start with the West. And then we'll go to the East. And if any breaking news happens, we will definitely let you guys know and hop on. And yeah, Brett, I love the video, baby. It's awesome seeing you.
Good to see you too, man.
We'll see you guys next week. Thank you.